Ken Timmerman, normally in Washington, D.C., is on the road. He's someplace in Europe. He's trying to finish up his latest book. Now, he's promised to give us an interview as soon as he completes it, and we'll tell you what it's all about and how you can get your copy. But he's still staying on top of current events as we get a hold of him. And you're probably closer to the action than I am there in Geneva, Switzerland, Ken. The fact is that the P5 plus one, the P5 would be the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council. That's China, Russia, the United States, the United Kingdom, and France. And plus they bring Germany in as well in these discussions in Geneva. Yesterday, Friday, they were coming to a conclusion, we thought. They did not. We now have it in Saturday, and as we speak, they're still trying to finalize everything that's concerned. So I'm not going to talk about ultimately did they do it, did they not, etc. But let's talk about the lead-up and then the follow-after of this agreement, should it indeed come to pass. I understand, Ken, that'll be 6 to 9 months. They'll be in intense negotiations to have a final deal if it comes together. A loosening of some of the sanctions on Iran, the banking and petroleum sales would be the loosening area. And then they promise to back off a little bit of their enrichment of uranium. Does this make any sense at all? If either thing does happen, is it going to result in anything different that's going on right now?
Well, you know, if you are a diplomat and you are simply interested in getting a deal for the deal's sake, it makes a lot of sense. And I can understand that Secretary Kerry would go after this. But if you are have any concern whatsoever for the security of the United States of America or the State of Israel or of our allies or the situation in the Middle East, it's a complete total disaster. President Obama has decided to enter this Persian nuclear bazaar to begin negotiating with the people who are masters at negotiations, and he's going to get his head handed to him. The Iranians are going to demand that we make upfront concessions. You mentioned lifting sanctions on the banking system and on their oil sales. This has been their prime goal for the past 5 years. They are desperate to get out from underneath not just U.S. sanctions, but Western sanctions in general. So we're going to give them already the goodie bag that comes at the end of the deal. And in the meantime, they're going to promise that they might actually begin to do something to scale back their nuclear program. This is just the wrong way to go about things. Unfortunately, it's the way that diplomats work all the time. This is what leads to wars.
Well, this game plan has really upset a lot in the Middle East, not only the Israelis, and we'll talk with David Dolan about their reaction, but the Saudi Arabians. And John Kerry made a visit into Saudi Arabia in an effort to try to smooth things over. I don't think he accomplished anything. Yeah, you said last time we talked that you didn't believe that the diplomatic ties have been broken between Saudi Arabia and the United States. I think they're very close. But at the same time, the Israeli foreign minister getting hold of his Pakistani counterparts and saying to them, you got a nuclear weapon for sale, we got the money, we'd like to buy one. That does not bode well.
That's absolutely right. And the Saudis are very upset with the United States. They've made that extremely clear over the past couple of weeks. They essentially believe that Washington is going to sell them down the river, and we're going to allow Iran to continue its clandestine nuclear program. We're going to lift the sanctions. We're going to cease the pressure on them, and they'll be able to do whatever they want. And the Saudis are making clear that they are going to take care of their own security, and they will turn to Pakistan, whose nuclear weapons program they financed in the beginning, and say the work out an arrangement with the Pakistanis. Either there'll be Pakistani troops guarding nuclear weapons in Saudi Arabia, or perhaps the Saudis will simply make a more clandestine deal. That's what I think that they're more likely to do. And in other words, keep the weapons in Pakistan so it doesn't look like they've been transferred to Saudi Arabia, but have a Saudi key to those weapons so they can use them at any time they think that Iran has gone past their red line.
Well, the Saudi Arabians, you know, they sound very, very concerned about a nuclear packed Iran and the possibility, if they were powered with that nuclear weapon in Iran, that the Saudis would have some real trouble. In fact, I've heard reports coming out of the Middle East that instead of striking Israel first, they would strike Saudi Arabia. You know anything about that?
Well, it's quite possible, and my Iranian sources have told me about operational plans already underway to target Saudi oil facilities, oil export facilities, with conventional missiles, containerized missiles that they pre-positioned in the Saudi desert that could be fired against oil facilities. So, yeah, I think the Saudis are very definitely worried about this, that they could be the first on the firing line, because that would help to generate a worldwide crisis by taking Saudi oil off the market.
Boy, politics does make strange bedfellows. You have the Israelis and the Saudi Arabians agreeing about something that could happen very soon now. Well, let's focus, if you will, with me on what has happened in 1979 there in Tehran, Iran. The terrorists, actually, the young people of Iran taking over the American embassy. They just had a celebration of that, shouting death to the United States, death to Israel. Doesn't seem like they really want to have any type of relationship, does it?
Well, you know, this is the annual celebration of the takeover of the U.S. embassy, which was not just carried out by students. It was carried out by groups who were loyal to Ayatollah Khomeini, and he supported them all through the 444 days of the hostage taking. That was pretty clear. And the hostage taking has been a kind of bellwether for this regime. As long as they insist on the hostility with the United States, they believe that they can stay in power. I think that perhaps the biggest threat to the regime in Tehran is making some kind of peace deal with America, a real peace deal with America. I don't mean the phony kind of deal that Obama is seeking, but one where you would have a U.S. embassy back in Tehran, where you would have people able to line up for visas to the United States, for tourist visas, where you'd have U.S. investment in Iran, and open borders where Iranians could see exactly how impoverished their regime is, and how much it's turning them into a life of desperation. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but that's what they truly fear. They fear Western influence in their country, and they have tried to gin up these fires against the West ever since 1979.
Again, there is a report coming out of Russia that Vladimir Putin, the president, is going to make a visit to Egypt. He's going to try to fill that vacuum left by the United States military funding coming out of Egypt. Now, again, Vladimir Putin pounding his chest, trying to become the superpower of the world.
Well, this is a huge deal, and it's a huge error on the part of the Obama administration. Egypt has been a 30-year ally of the United States, and they came over to our side really before that in 1973, after the war, the Arab-Israeli war in 1973, where they essentially replaced their Soviet weaponry with American standard goods. And now, because of a peak on the part of the White House, a temper tantrum by President Obama, we are not going to be reliable suppliers to Egypt's military, and they're going to go back to Russian standard equipment. This is a strategic loss, probably as important as Obama's losing Turkey.
And thinking about the situation in Egypt, let's stay there a few moments. Secretary of State Kerry was in Egypt within the last week, tried to make amends for what they are doing, etc. But at the same time, while he was there, a prominent Islamic cleric is calling for jihad against the Egyptian military. Boy, this thing is not settled in Egypt, is it?
Well, it shows you how fragile the situation really is, and it shows you also where the battle lines are drawn. And this is something that neither Secretary Kerry nor President Obama seems to appreciate very well. General al-Sisi, who was swept into power by 30 million Egyptians in an extremely popular uprising against Mohammed al-Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood dictator, General al-Sisi would love to have support from the United States, and we are essentially slapping him in the face and forcibly turning him towards Russia. he still has enemies, and that's what this is all about. The Muslim Brotherhood is still determined to overthrow al-Sisi. They are determined to drive the United States and Western countries in general out of Egypt, and our administration in the United States just has failed to recognize this.
Well, the Muslim Brotherhood has not gone away. They still have a plan for Egypt. They want it back. In fact, that's what Morsi, the former president, is saying at the court of law. We'll continue to cover this story with a man who is on top of world events, geopolitical activities that are setting the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled. I'm talking about Ken Timmerman, our man in Washington, D.C., in Europe, finishing up his book. We'll keep you posted on how that progress comes with the book. Ken, have a good time there writing your book, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks very much. God bless you.